Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Nicole Dempsey, who'll be telling us a little bit about PHA Canada. So tell me a little bit about PHA.
I'm talking about the disease or the organization?
A little of both.
Okay. So pulmonary hypertension is a progressive disease in which the arteries of the lungs narrow and scar, thus leading to right-sided heart failure. So the right side of the heart enlarges and struggles to pump blood through those arteries, and then leaves the patient kind of struggling in various ways. And unless treated, they have a very short time left to live.
So do you know offhand about how many people are affected by this condition?
Well, the number is unknown, but there's approximately 5,000 in Canada, but there could be up to 10,000 because it's a disease that gets left undiagnosed or misdiagnosed often. At the moment, our PH specialists across Canada don't really have an accurate number.
So can you tell me a little bit about the organization's work in regards to this condition?
Yeah, so PHA Canada is there for support and for education and, might want to start that over. I'm sorry. So the organization is there for support of the whole Canadian community. They are nonprofit, and they educate, obviously, as much as they can through the website, through Facebook group, through social media, in any way they can. They are there. They are a very small organization, and there's also a board of directors as well.
So are there any challenges in the work itself?
Yeah, the challenges are, so currently there are 10 pulmonary hypertension medications available to the patients across Canada. There are more that exist, but only 10 that have been approved for distribution. So the challenges are that what PHA Canada does is we like to try to get access to these medications. So we're always trying to work with the government, with just different people who will allow the possibility of new medications to come available to patients. Because with this disease, it's kind of like, it's not a one pill for every patient. Every patient kind of takes a cocktail of medications as for myself, I take three different medications, and these pH medications, and it won't necessarily be the same three that will help someone else, because with the disease, there are three pathways to treat the disease, and so the medications will go through to different pathways. And so that's one of the challenges, is just to get access to as many medications as we can. So right now, for example, the United States has 14 that they have access to, while we only have 10. So it's always a challenge to just kind of get as many out there as we can to best treat the Canadian pH community.
So in your time with the organization, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're always reaching patients. And the thing is, we don't even reach, we may reach 25% of the pH population in Canada. So it's always a success when we can reach someone else and get them to know about us and to know what kind of support. And we've had some success. You know, we've been to Queen's Park to lobby for access to medication. And, you know, we get told all the time that, you know, PHA Canada is such a wonderful organization and, you know, with good people. And so I feel like that's a success for us. And just, you know, we're small, we're close-knit, and we do what we can with what we have.
So if you could send any one message to the community about why there should be equal access for these medications and why the work is important, what would you say?
Oh, boy. It's kind of what I may have said earlier, that, you know, it's not... We need as much out there as possible to get the best treatment possible. Everyone needs, an equal a chance at surviving. And so there might be a medication out there that's not available to Canadians that could be that one medication that will prolong someone's life.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, sure.
In the next segment of our show, we're going to hear from an old friend. DJ Dave Squeaky Wheels is going to be telling us a little bit about what he's been up to. So it's been a while since you've made an appearance on here. What have you been up to these past few?
Yeah, physical and, audio appearance. It's good to hear from you, Cameron. I missed you, buddy.
Missed you.
I guess you discarded all those postcards I sent, you know? There's a bunch of dead ravens that were trying to send them to you, but I guess they none of them got to you. I'm good, man. I'm working at CGM now. I actually have a show in Oakburg. It's called The Shake Up. It's a historical viewpoint of LGBTQ history. So we talk about activism, the AIDS crisis. There's a lot of elders who come in and share their stories. But we also try and keep it contemporary. I have a few friends of mine that came in. Good friend of mine, Mel Lucier. She's a comic, female comic, a killer one. And then another good friend of mine, Roseanne DeMarco. She is a school teacher and just recently came out. So this is kind of like chronicle their stories, see where they're at and see what's going on. So I've been doing that. Just starting up my podcast. And there's a couple years where I just kind of went dark, so to speak. I don't know, we call it ghosting now. But wasn't really in school, wasn't really doing much. Had some odd jobs here and there. Just in telemarketing stuff, you know. Was in Toronto for a bit, in London for a bit. Then I saw an ad in the paper, actually, through The Y. It was called The Y Works, and there was called Y Opportunities, and that one was more suited for people with disabilities. So I initially had applied for that one. And it's funny how life and the universe and one of my favorite words has been serendipity as of late, because I initially applied for that program, and they said, we're not going to pursue your application. But the Y Work instantly called me back and said, we just have an opening, and we'd love to have you. And what it is it's a 8 to 12-week course. They just give you a crash course on making connections. They give you resources. because it's for anybody, young adults with employment barriers. I'm messing up that slogan, but any type of employment barriers that you had in the past, they try to correct. You know, it's basically a crash course in improving yourself. They had a financial consultant come in. You know, there was meditation done. They had emphasis on resume building, just like all the quick stuff that we take for granted. Helped me tremendously. I applied to a number of different places, heard nothing back, so I was a little discouraged there for a bit when some of my classmates were getting what they wanted, or at least had, like, were able to build on that. But the opportunity with CJAM came up, and here I am, and now you're stuck with me.
So I'm wondering, you mentioned with your new show, you deal in the AIDS crisis. Do you do anything to clear up some of the myths surrounding it? Because there's still a lot of misinformation floating around out there.
Oh, for sure. It's one of the double-edged swords of the internet. You know, we have this this convenient access to information and the plethora of all this knowledge, but you can also have jumble and you can have nonsense misinformation as well. So honestly, what we try to do, myself, my co-host Emerson McIntosh, what we do is we just try and get the people that we come in to just share their stories, cultivate the right environment to make them comfortable, and to I guess kind of give knowledge to that and kind of speak on that.
Well,
but yeah, you're gonna get misinformation, but for the most part, people nowadays are fairly more educated. It's a disease where it can be treated more than it can take away from your life. So that gives people a different perspective. And plus, it's what you emphasize on this show a lot, and that's why I listened back to a couple of our episodes. We emphasize humanizing people and just saying, "What was your slogan again?" Disability is the new normal.
That's the one.
Yeah, I promise I'm not. I am not getting cutbacks from this, people. I make no money off that slogan. This is Mr. Cameron's slogan.
Yeah, I make all kinds of money, but leaving that aside.
He does. None of which he put into fashion, my friend. Oh, my goodness.
It's radio. Who's going to know?
I know. They're going to hear your chains on the floor, you know, like a fortune teller or something.
But honestly, with any disability, any disease out there, there's got to be that human element. There's got to be, this isn't just some cold statistic. This is a real person with a real story who ended up this way. And I'm glad to hear that you're putting that perspective on it.
Well, it's like that, but I think people don't realize is that we don't choose how we're born, when we're born, and who we're born to. So it could happen to any one of us, and that's why I do appreciate for all of the, the hysteria that's going on now. We are moving towards a more sensitivity, more understanding-based, social society, where it's better to empathize with people as opposed to kind of categorize and push them aside. Because you can learn something from them. There's so many people that I never thought I would be friends with even to this day that I've learned so much knowledge from, so much perspective from. And it really does enhance your life and enhances your social circle. It's a cure for any type of depression, any type of social angst that people feel. Everyone, people say, "Oh, I just feel anxious," or anything like that. So you got to expand your friend group, man. And it doesn't have to, I'm not saying you can be friends with everybody because that's virtually impossible, but just to kind of come together and find people who are somewhat like-minded, somewhat open, and who can enhance your life, who can, like I said, give you a different perspective.
Well,
that's very important.
That's the thing. Isolation breeds a lot of mental health issues and sort of creates its own disabilities. So,
yeah, man. It's not to harp on myself too much, but that's what I was going through for a good year and a half, you know. I didn't really know how to bring it up because, you know, whether it's cultural or whatever, or whether it's masculine pride, I just didn't feel like it's something I wanted to bother people with, and I didn't feel like they want to be a bummer at the party, you know. Nobody wants to, talk to the guy who's like bumming in the corner, just kind of sulking with nothing to say.
Yeah, nobody wants to kind of go there, but you have to kind of break out of that pattern in order to get things rolling.
You have to, man. That's what it is, the yin and the yang, the dark and the light. I sound like I'm going over my philosophy notes, you know, so that if I was a philosophy PA or something.
Oh, you and I both know you never studied philosophy.
Hell no. It was the first course I took, literally the first class I took at the U. I got a B in it, and I maybe went. I went to class, like, quite frequently, but I barely read any of the text. I used a lot of cold notes and looking off the other person's paper.
Well,
we all learn in different ways, you know.
Yeah, you shouldn't confess to plagiarism on the air, though.
I should not, but it was volunteer. It was voluntarily, okay?
And alleged.
Okay,
I didn't hear nothing.
You did not, man.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time. And
oh, that's it? I was just getting coffee.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Calling all KISS fans!
Windsor's own KISS cover band, Destroyer, is playing the Old Walkerville Theater on Saturday, August 24th, alongside Midnight Metro. This show is in support of In Honor of the Ones We Love, a nonprofit organization devoted to supporting cancer patients. Doors open at 7 p.m., the show starts at 8, and tickets are available in advance by calling 519-972-0083 or by emailing steall@live.ca. Check out Destroyer and Midnight Metro at the Old Walkerville Theater, located at 1564 Wyandotte Street East.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about PHA from Nicole Dempsey and from DJ Dave Squeaky Wheels about his new show. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Alan Redford from Little People of Ontario. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with LPO.
Well, LPO's been busy the last couple of years. I guess in 2017, we hosted the World Dwarf Games in Guelph, Ontario. And we had 59 athletes across Canada, and we came home with 105 medals. So that was great, fantastic. A terrific empowering event for all of our members and across Canada, I guess, for the Dwarf Athletic Association of Canada anyway. And then we're working right now on a dwarfism awareness and acceptance campaign. So most of the U.S., I guess there are 20 states that have passed it, that the month of October is Dwarfism Acceptance Month. And we added dwarfism awareness, and we added the acceptance after hearing that the state of Washington added that as well. And I think that's really important, because not only do you have to be aware, but you have to accept, you know, what the differences are in groups of people that are perhaps minorities in various different ways.
So
we're working on that.
So when it comes to things like respect for those with dwarfism, how do you feel about things like dwarf tossing and events like that?
Well, yeah, I think that's something like that is completely abhorrent. And I was speaking recently with the York Regional Police about that, because there was legislation in 2003 that was put forward to ban dwarf tossing. Made second reading, but I think the government changed, so it didn't actually go through. But in speaking with York Regional Police, they actually believe that it is or could be classified as a hate crime or a hate bias crime. So perhaps we don't actually need the legislation. It's already in the code. And frankly, we've been lucky that there hasn't really been anything that's gone on in quite a while. So I think that's a good thing.
So, what have been some of the major successes that you've experienced through LPO in recent memory?
I think we want to speak about Dwarfism Awareness and Acceptance Month. The City of Toronto has proclaimed it, as well as the town of Milton. And I have applications in to Windsor and Ottawa, so we've got our finger crossed there. We've met with a number of MPs federally to try to get that across the country, as well as MPPs in Ontario, and to get that working. So really, I think we're really proceeding in that way, and I'm very proud of our group of volunteers doing all of that.
So if you could send any message to the community about why
respect and acceptance are key for any person, especially those with a condition like dwarfism. What would you say?
Well, I think that you know, the language or the words that we use often direct society, the society that we live in, you know, our culture, our world, and we want to live in a just world. And I think that's clearly shown across Canada for a number of reasons. You know, we want to live in a kind world, an equitable world of diversity, inclusion, and acceptance. And bottom line is, it just makes sense to treat others as you would want to be treated. And that's with dignity and respect.
So what are the next steps going forward in preparation for the Acceptance and Awareness Month?
Well, we're going to continue to meet with our local and provincial and federal politicians, getting the word out there. And I encourage anybody, particularly in Windsor and the area, we've met a few down there, when they were in Toronto at Queen's Park. I think they're all on side. I don't think it's anything that it's something across all parties, but it doesn't matter who you are. I think everybody thinks that this is a great idea. And I think we can continue to put pressure on with that, as well as put on some events. So things like some of the barbecues and some of the things where we just get some of our members out there that we can see, that can be seen, and talk with people so that they understand where things are coming from.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
To end off today's show, we're going to hear a little bit about parking mobility from Mac Marsh. To end off today's show, we're going to hear a little bit about eating disorders. This segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Tania Lemione from BACA. So tell me a little bit about BACA.
Well, BACA is a private clinic, multidisciplinary clinic, comprised of different types of professionals, psychologists, psychotherapists, medical doctors, nutritional counselors, and other types of counselors, family therapists, that I founded in 2001, so quite a bit away, that works with people who suffer from anorexia, bulimia, and related eating disorder.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the myths out there concerning anorexia and bulimia and what society tends to think in regards to these patients?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think that, anorexia and bulimia are perceived very differently. When it comes to anorexia, I think the greatest myth that's out there is that people need to be absolutely emaciated to suffer from anorexia. So the typical documentaries that have been done, especially the on camera, where you see especially young women who look like concentration camp survivors. For sure, some people get to that level of severity. But most of the people, if you were, you know, we're a clinic, we're about 24 professionals who work at BACA on any given day, and we only work with people who have eating disorders. On any given day, if anyone were to sit in our waiting room, you would see people of different weights and sizes, and a lot of people who suffer from anorexia are underweight, but maybe don't seem to be so underweight because thinness is so revered, yet they have so many rules and they're under eating, and they find ways to either hide their weight or society has gotten used to extreme thinness. So that would be the greatest myth with anorexia. I think also with anorexia, a myth is that people who suffer from anorexia, it's simply about wanting to look good. It is actually an illness that's associated with people who need to control or who have a hard time regulating their own emotions. And it's not just a choice. At some point, you're really stuck in this battle where you know that you are not feeding yourself enough, but you kind of give in to this internal doctrine that you must either eat a certain way or not eat certain foods or not eat a certain quantity, so you feel trapped. So it's not just about beauty and thinness.
So
and when it comes to bulimia, bulimia are people who will eat and purge, eat excessive amounts of weight normally in a briefer period of time, and who will find a way to purge either through self-induced vomiting or through excessive exercising or other means. I don't like to talk about all the other means because people who have eating disorders compare themselves a lot, and they like to pick up on tricks that what other people do. But anyways, people who suffer from bulimia, there's a gamut as well of different bodies and weights, and it is in part people who have either gone from anorexia and their bodies cannot take the extreme restriction, and so they will at some point give in and start eating, and then they'll binge. And they will feel incredibly guilty, and they will want to find a way to eliminate the food intake. You also find people who have been dieting for a long period of time who never were really anorexic, but want to be able to continue to eat certain foods, but they don't want the consequence of either gaining weight or feeling guilty for eating quote-unquote bad foods according to their own list of good and bad foods. And so they find a way to purge that food. The myth is also that it's similar to anorexia, that it's not necessarily a choice. It is an illness as well. It can become very addictive to binge and also very addictive to purge. It's very difficult to get yourself out of that cycle. And so that's why a lot of times you will need to seek professional multidisciplinary care.
So what do these conditions tend to do to a person's self-image? And you got to figure the mental health strain placed on either one and the body image would be pretty extreme.
Sure, sure. Well, I think there's an overimportance or reliance on physical body to dictate your self-worth. The problem with that is multifaceted. Number one, people who have eating disorders do not see themselves for what they are. So typically, if you're anorexic, you believe oftentimes that, you know, there are at least parts of your body that are much heavier than they actually are. And with bulimia, there's this incredible criticism and comparison with other young women or men of the same age. And so they don't like their bodies. And so if their value comes from their physical appearance and they're predisposed to not liking their physical appearance, then their entire self-esteem and self-worth is very low. The other thing is that when you suffer from an eating disorder, you're engaged in that behavior a long period of time. It's very obsessive throughout every day. You end up isolating. You end up removing yourself from situations where you will have positive feedback and connections regarding school or friendships. And so you're not validated as an individual. You're in this vacuum of this eating disorder. And so you're only seeing the failures and, you know, with your body and the fact that you're not able to accomplish what you'd like to accomplish outside of or in other areas of your life. So it's very detrimental.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.